Entrepreneurship, leadership, and free market capitalism. You are listening to Kill Bigger Radio with Kyle Keegan.
Welcome back to the Kill Bigger Radio Show. We are bringing high quality, big thinking business content to Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeart, YouTube, Stitcher, and all of your favorites. We build things that matter, we build things that last, and we kill bigger. I am your host, Kyle Keegan. Thank you for joining us today on this Thursday. I appreciate you guys. I'm so glad that you are here. My apologies for not getting around to one yesterday. I got really busy, and I wasn't actually on top of my game as much as I should have been yesterday, but I will fully admit that when that happens, and here I am to redeem myself today because I have quite the episode for you. I found an amazing article, and we are going to talk about that today. But before we get there, if you haven't had the chance to go ahead and listen to the Cup of Coffee episode. That is a business lesson in massive human cooperation, okay? I got inspired by the fact that there was a cup of coffee sitting on my desk, and where in the hell did that thing come from, right? What led to that finally finding its way to my desk, right? And all of the businesses that had to cooperate, I will go ahead and spoil it for you guys. It's infinite. You can keep going and going and going and going and find businesses that did business with other businesses in order to make that cup of coffee land here. Okay. So you can go to almost the beginning of time if you follow this thing far enough. And that is just, it's a lesson in the cooperation of individuals in business to produce a common goal, right? We're all in it to improve our human condition, right? That's what capitalism is all about. A human won't act unless it's to improve their human condition. Well, if all humans are working together to improve their own human conditions, economically speaking, everyone starts to prosper and everybody starts to build on one another. And I made the case that this is why lockdowns are so dangerous, right? Because if you screw up that delicate balance of so many different people working together, the ripple effects are so massive, so unbelievably massive. So you talk about the ripple effects in business. We talk about how every sort of business depends on other businesses. And then we talk about how there's tons of opportunity hiding in plain sight. When you're looking for opportunity, it's not just sell coffee to customer, end of story. It's look at all of the things that went into that cup of coffee. Every single one of those is a cash flowing potential business. If you can think how to do any one of those different spokes to that hub differently or better than the competition, you stand to make a lot of money, folks. And that is what business is all about, constant improvement and collaboration with others. And it was amazing to me. And I thought that was great. And it didn't do it any justice because I wasn't feeling the best that day either. I could have done that better. And I'm hoping today I feel a little bit better. I can sit down in front of the mic and give you a hell of a show with this article I read from the Mises Institute. And I get their mailing list. Actually, guys, I'm a big fan of the Mises Institute, you know, with the smile.amazon.com thing where you support a different charity or whatever with your Amazon account when you purchase stuff. I've had mine set to the Mises Institute for a long time. And that is based on the teachings of Ludwig von Mises. He's a famous economist, Austrian economist. And the Institute is really cool. They do a lot of cool educational stuff. A lot of it is free. You guys can go check that stuff out at Mises.org. I think it is Mises.org. And I'll put that article in the description here. But they do a lot of great stuff on a very basic understanding of economics for people, you know, and from an Austrian viewpoint. And they really make great arguments for how it really works without the deep diving crazy stuff that people start to, you know, get lost in and then start arguing back, right? So they keep it simple. How many people here know how much easier it is to argue with an idiot when you keep the argument very, very simple? Well, that's kind of the point that they are trying to go for here with the Mises Institute. And this article caught my eye. It landed in my inbox, and I was like, I have to do a show about this article. And I know I've done some things about articles lately, and I don't give a shit. This is too damn good. The title of the article is "Should Billionaires Exist?" Billionaires with a B, right? Should billionaires exist? And it starts off here. It says, a mantra popularized by Bernie Sanders and like-minded progressives declares billionaires shouldn't exist. The statement serves as both a declaration of the immorality of wealth inequality, as well as a justification for steep confiscatory taxes on the wealth favored by the likes of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. It says, while on the campaign trail last year, Sanders says, I don't think billionaires should exist, adding to his tax proposal that he does not eliminate billionaires, but eliminates a lot of the wealth that billionaires have. And I think that's exactly what we should be doing. You know, that's how he would have said, that's what we should be doing. The goal, according to Sanders, is reduce the outrageous and grotesque and immoral levels of income, wealth, inequality. Have we ever thought, I'm going to stop right here for a moment, have we ever thought that there is an unequal amount of production? There's an unequal amount of value provided to the world, provided to the market. And I believe people should get exactly what they earn, right? If you earn nothing, you should get exactly what you earn. If you provide zero value, you should get exactly what you're entitled to. And that is nothing. That is nothing. It's a very fine line that these politicians walk, because if you look at what's called the Laffer curve, I don't know exactly how they say it, but it's a curve that shows peak taxation for governments, right? So actually, if the government raises tax rates, that doesn't necessarily mean they raise tax revenue. A lot like a business is concerned, a government may lose tax revenue if they raise their prices, essentially. Like you know, if you are selling golf clubs and all of a sudden you're 50% over market, you know, you're going to sell way less golf clubs, right? And it's not unlike the government. And the interesting thing is, you know, you've got these politicians who are basically arguing, let's raise our prices. That's the only option. We need to raise our prices so we can make more money, right? That is essentially the argument that they're dragging down here, is that all of a sudden the governments will make more money if they raise their prices. And that's not necessarily the case. We're nearing peak taxation now with regards to all of the different economic metrics that they use to measure that. You can't really drag much more out of a productive populace than you currently do right now. So taxation beyond that peak, right, can only be defined as either one, popularity and idiocy, right? Just feeding the notion of the idiot people who don't understand economics, right? And they don't care, or punishment. And really they're kind of one and the same, right? So it's popular to punish a billionaire for being a billionaire, and they shouldn't be a billionaire. Well, why shouldn't they be a billionaire, right? Why shouldn't they if they earned it, right? And we are, for today's show, going to focus not on the oligarch, you know, Amazons, the oligarch Bill Gates, you know, stuff like that. These guys who are, you know, Jamie Dimon and Warren Buffett, these guys that are using the government to get very, very wealthy. And if you look at the Fed policy with this high inflation, that is a policy made for the mega elite, right? Not necessarily the people who are worth $1 billion or high nine figures or something like that. These people that you've never heard of in your entire life is who we're talking about today, right? I know that Sanders and Elizabeth Warren love to bitch about billionaires, and they immediately think, when they think billionaires, is Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos and these evil, you know, business people. You know, they make them out to be evil. I don't know how evil they exactly are, but they're certainly hypocrites. And they certainly are not full-blown capitalists. They're making a lot of their money in an oligarch fashion. And what we're really talking about here are the businessmen and women at the very peak of their game, right? So you are a very successful businessman or businesswoman if you are worth $750,000 or $750 million to, you know, $3 billion. So the people that you don't even know who they are, right? Those are very successful business people, and they did so by providing value to a marketplace, right? This isn't the oligarch level of business. This is still a big business, but not an oligarch level of crazy business where you've made your money mostly because you're well connected with government and a monopoly on force, right? And so we're going to ignore for today the, you know, Jeff Bezoses of the world, the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world, because that is a separate argument altogether. And I've actually had that argument as well on this show, and I can dig up that episode and throw that in the description as well, where I kind of took on those guys and how they aren't capitalists. They're not engaged in capitalism the way we talk about capitalism, right? They're forcing things upon people to make money, and that isn't exactly how it should go. Folks, there is a reason why people like that will argue for higher taxation. There's a reason why Warren Buffett and Jamie Dimon and Ray Dalio, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Tim Cook, there's a reason why all of these guys want to have higher taxes and socialism. There's a reason why they're all socialists. So if, you know, you are in that camp where you're like, oh yeah, billionaires shouldn't exist, I wonder why they agree with you. I wonder why they agree with your politician. If you're one of these people who think Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren are a good solution for this, and punishing wealthy people simply because they are wealthy, why the ultra crazy oligarchs that are always on the news, that are always at the forefront of these billionaires that everybody hates on, actually agree with you and want this, right? I'll let you let that sink in. It's because it's better for them, right? It's better for them. They're going to end up robbing from the upper class that you don't know, right? The upper class who are worth, you know, 50 to, you know, 50 million to 3 billion type range, they're going to end up robbing from them and absorbing a lot of that business. And the businesses will fall at the very top under socialism. And if you want proof for that, look at Russia, right? You've got the oligarchs in Russia. They're wildly crazy, unbelievably rich. And why is that? Well, because the government bends over backwards to support them and help them be rich as shit, right? They help them be absolutely crazy rich. And the folks who are in the, you know, lower earning spots, and I did an entire show. I did an entire show about the Forbes billionaire list and all of the people down the list that are super inspirational to me because I've never heard of them in my life. And that's awesome, right? There's a ton of them. When that list gets smaller and smaller and smaller, who's left, ladies and gentlemen? The very, very, very top. And was that really something we wanted, right? Was that really something? Do we want less choice as consumers? Do we want less competition as consumers? No, of course not. Competition is good for us. So I'm going to continue forward with the article here. But first, I need to get one more thing out of here. The immorality of wealth. I mean, I've addressed this numerous times on this show, but if you are new to the show right now, we argue on this show, we make the case on this show that there is nothing, absolutely nothing immoral about making an audacious amount of wealth in this world, as long as you are engaged in capitalism. As long as nothing is by force, there's no reason why your value that you put into this world shouldn't be compensated and compensated for well. So if you are wealthy, you're listening to this show, you're wealthy, you're a multimillionaire, you're closing in on being a billionaire, something like that. This is a show that believes in your right to do this, especially if you are engaged in capitalism, right? It is a win-win, mutually beneficial exchange of value between willing parties. That is what capitalism is. And if you're engaged in that, who did you screw to get there? You didn't screw anybody to get there. And there's all these people who say things like, oh, if you make $1 million, that's $1 million that somebody else had to lose, right? If you're doing this with capitalism, they traded you their dollars willingly for something they valued more than their dollars. So that is where we stand here. There is no immorality to making a ton of money. There is immorality in punishing people and forcing people to do things based upon the government, right? When you're weaponizing the government, I was watching this show with my wife, Yellowstone. We're actually really enjoying this Yellowstone. It's about Montana, a big ranch in Montana, and it's really cool. And we're enjoying that show tremendously. And one of the quotes in this show that just nailed me hard is that lawyers are the swords of the modern age, right? Lawyers are the swords of the modern age. Why? Because the government is the weapon, right? The government is the ultimate weapon to use against your adversaries, right? And if you watch that show, you can watch how people twist and turn the government against their business adversaries like crazy. You should definitely check out that show just purely from that standpoint where they manipulate the government and they put people in positions of power. They are in positions of power, and they manipulate the government, the authority on the matter, to an ends that makes them money. And that shows you kind of that oligarch way on a, you know, sort of a rural scale, which was kind of interesting. And that's an awesome show. You guys should check that out. It is not free on any of the streaming services, unfortunately, so you got to pay for it. I think it's a Paramount thing. And it's fantastic, and it's a great example of business people using the government. That is not engaging in capitalism. And you'll see what I'm talking about if you decide to watch the show. Okay, on with the article, guys. It says, according to people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, reducing inequality starts with the state taxing away wealth from those in possession of an unacceptable amount, deemed by them, obviously, followed by redistribution to lower wealth households. The wealthy will have less, but the rest will have more, goes the theory. Inequality is reduced, right? This is all in quotation marks. This is how they think about this kind of thing, right? They don't think about the ripple effects of their actions. They only think about the surface level. And then it says, as Ludwig von Mises points out in Human Action, confiscatory taxes on the wealthy may indeed cause billionaires to be slightly worse off, but the rest of us will be harmed more severely. And here is a direct quote from Mises himself. It says, a law that prohibits any individual from accumulating more than 10 millions or from making more than 1 million per year restricts the activities of precisely those entrepreneurs who are most successful in filling the wants of consumers, he wrote. Under such confiscatory taxation, Mises continued, many who are multimillionaires today would live in more modest circumstances, but all those new branches of industry which supply the masses with articles of unheard of before would operate, if at all, on a much smaller scale, and their products would be beyond the reach of the common man. Okay. Can you imagine if we took, you know, this confiscatory taxation level to its extreme and screwed over Steve Jobs, right? Steve Jobs, we can call him the father of the iPhone at some point, right? That was the one trigger that changed the entire communication preferences of the world, right? So the iPhone came around. They did touchscreens right, in a right enough way where people really adopted them and went crazy. Well, what happens if you would have punished him for being successful, right? He was already a successful man, and he decided to just say, you know what, I'm going to back off of this a little bit, and I'm not going to take this quite as far as it could, because what the hell am I doing it for, right? What do I get out of that matter, right? You know, and I know a lot of people are driven by a want and a willingness to change the world, but when you don't have a profit motive, your ability to change the world gets really, really tamped. being able to do such a thing would be very, very hard. There'd be a lot of headwinds to that. And can you imagine what would have happened if we did away with the ability for Steve Jobs to make much more money, right? At that point in his career, because he was already successful, right, guys? Now you're successful enough, Steve Jobs. Now you're not allowed to do anything else, right? And if you do something else, it's on purely, you know, you're basically donating all of the proceeds of that to the government. Like, come on, that's obviously not going to end well, right? He was the guy best suited to bring about a new change in communication devices to the world. And because he had a profit motive, he went forward with it and he did it, and he did it very, very well. Right. And that changed everything. And I'm currently not an iPhone user, but I love iPhones too. And at the same time, it's the reason why my Samsung is the same way it is, because everybody realized there was a better way to do things. Right. Take that even a step farther back in history. Take that back to the Wright brothers. Right. What if the government would have said, you know, you guys have a bicycle shop and you've done well in your bicycle shop. So, go screw yourself when it comes to building a flying machine. You know, if you want to do it, it's for a hobby only, and there's no commercial value to it whatsoever. Now, granted, they may have done it as a hobby, but why would they have released the flying machine with any sort of commercial value, any sort of patents, any sort of anything, if there was nothing in it for them, right? If there was absolutely nothing in it for them. And the answer is they wouldn't have. If you want to stagnate progress in this world, progress that we all enjoy as, you know, mere peons compared to these billionaires, all you have to do is tax them out of existence. They won't want to work anymore. They won't want to put cool things into this world anymore if there's no profit motive for it. Remember, humans act to improve their condition, right? If you no longer allow people to improve their condition, you know, there's this cap, there's this ladder that you're climbing up, and this guy's doing a great job of providing great things to the market that the market really, really likes, and all of a sudden you have to say to him, nope, you're done, buddy. No more profit motive for you. You have pissed on the very person best suited to providing cool new things to the world. So I love that quote from Ludwig von Mises there, the people best suited to providing customers what they want, consumers what they want, that they don't even know that they need, you're going to do away with that ability with confiscatory taxation. He goes on to say that the greater part of that higher income that's normally taxed away now under these new policies are used to accumulate additional capital. And we're not talking about capital in terms of money. We're talking about capital in terms of productivity, productive means, right? So any sort of means of production that they are able to purchase with said extra income, they're able to do that, which, guys, this is exponential, right? So the better you are as an entrepreneur, the better at this you are of providing value to the market, it's exponential. So the later and later and later you get in life, and the more and more good you get at this, the higher profits you make, but the more value comes out of you as well as you get further and further along in this process, right? But you're cutting the head off of it right where it would be the best, right? That sweet spot, right? You see it with Steve Jobs once again, right? He had the computer company. He was a very wealthy man with the Macintosh and things like that. You know, he had done very, very well for himself. But it built on itself and it built on itself and it built on itself, and he kept investing, you know, the company kept growing and investing in capital and the ability, the new means of production, the new means of research. And what came out the other side of that was a tremendous value that's off the charts compared to anything that came before it at Apple Computer, right? And the reason for that is that it is exponential. So when you do away with the ability for somebody to get that rich, you're really chopping off the best part of their entire production, right? At the very top. So you really are ruining the ability for things to progress in the world. Mises makes the case that household items that we take for granted, like air conditioning, internet connection, computers, smartphones, all of those would have remained luxury goods accessible only by the people who are already rich. That's like air travel. Air travel was something that has come down in price significantly. He says, and plans like Sanders would not only fail to improve the living standards of the common man, Mises warned they would further shift power away from the citizens and into the hands of the government. Well, you know, I think a lot of people believe that the government has their best interest in mind, but when was the last time the government did anything for you that you felt like you got great value out of it, right? That this was just a great, great policy, right? And the fact of the matter is, and I've said it on this show before, the government can't give anything to anybody that it doesn't first take from somebody else, right? And you might say, oh, well, they can print money and something like that. They take your purchasing power then. They take your purchasing power. So they only can redistribute, right? They can only redistribute. And if you redistribute from efficiency to the inefficient, you're causing malinvestment in the country and malinvestment across the board. And malinvestment is bad long term. It creates things like housing bubbles and stock market bubbles and dollar bubbles, for that matter, if you've got a Fed inflating a inflation bubble as well that can pop as well. So the article continues. Here again, the issue is who should be supreme, the consumers or the government? In unhampered markets, the behavior of consumers, their buying or abstention from buying, ultimately determines each individual's income and wealth. Should one vest in the government the power to overrule the consumer choice? No, of course not. The government should not be able to overrule consumer choice. He says, such intervention into the functioning of the market economy, Mises added, would make society's allocation of resources less efficient. He who serves the public best makes the highest profits. In fighting profits, government deliberately sabotages the operation of the market economy. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more, because profits flow to those who provide the most value, right? If you are engaged in capitalism, this is what we're talking about. This is what we always talk about. If you're engaged in actual capitalism, not oligarch bullshit, not this, you know, one set of rules for me, a different set of rules for everybody else type of running your business, right? We should be mad, guys. We should be mad, but we should be mad at the, we shouldn't be mad at this. We should be mad at something very, very different. And that is the control and manipulation of governments and politicians to their own ends and their own gains at our expense, right? That is what we should be pissed off about. Not pissed off that they want to have the audacity to sell you an amazing phone at a price that you're willing to pay, right? That they want to sell you oil at a price that you're willing to pay, that they want to sell you an airfare plane ticket at a price that you're willing to pay. Why is anyone pissed off about that, right? I like being able to fly. I like having a new and cool phone in my pocket every 6 months. I like having cool new cars that drive themselves. The audacity for them to want to provide me with something that I think is cool. On the other hand, when they manipulate the government to their own ends, right? To stifle progress to their own ends. You know, this is like the taxi cabs trying to shut down Uber, right? Why would anyone support that effort? I think everybody, even the communists, hate the idea of the taxi cab companies winning an argument against Uber, right? Nobody wants the old farty taxis. Nobody wants that anymore. Uber is so tremendously better than taxi cabs because there was an improvement in the world, right? How dare Uber want to sell us transportation services for so cheap? Come on, that doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't make any sense at all. We should be mad at the oligarchs, the people who want to screw us via government. We should not be mad at capitalist companies or capitalism in general. The article goes on to say a less efficient allocation of resources makes us all worse off. Of course it does. A result disproportionately harmful to the poor, whom Sanders and company claim to be championing. There is the key, guys. It's disproportionately bad for the poor. Everything that the poor has to purchase will go up in price because of these policies. And those at the top don't really give a shit how much the stuff that the poor people are buying costs, right? Because they can afford it handily. Finally, Mises points out that confiscatory taxation on wealth serves to protect the already wealthy entrepreneurs from competition. I said this exact thing. I said this exact thing when I called out the Warren Buffetts, the Jamie Dimons, the Ray Dalios of the world that are all arguing for higher taxation after they already became a billionaire, right? They've already earned their money. They know it. And that's why they want to change things, right? That's why they want to completely change the thing. And the funny thing is they think they can talk for the millionaires and billionaires. They do it all the time. The millionaires and billionaires should be paying more taxes. Well, who are you, Mr. Jamie Dimon, multi-billionaire, to talk for somebody who only has a $1 or $2 million net worth, right? Who are you to talk for that person? That's bullshit. You're thousands of times richer than that person, right? So they want a different set of rules, right? They, now that they already made their money with the set of rules that was already in place, they want to change the rules to make it harder for competition to enter the marketplace. That is oligarch crap, right? That's what we're talking about. That's where you can be mad. You can be mad at that. That is not capitalism, right? That isn't capitalism. Capitalism protects us from that. Capitalism is the system that lets that millionaire come challenge the billionaire at some point, right? But these oligarchs want to stop that potential from happening. He says, while it is true that the income tax prevents these billionaires, these oligarchs from creating new capital, what is more important for them is that it prevents the dangerous newcomer from accumulating any capital, right? That's exactly what I'm saying. It creates a barrier to entry for a dangerous newcomer via the ultimate force, the ultimate authority on the matter. You have no option. It's the government, right? So while these people control the government, they also are reaching into your pocket to keep you out of their crap, right? Because once somebody is very, very wealthy, they're mostly on capital gains taxes at that point, right? The majority of their income is capital gains, not income, right? Not operating income. And when you get to that point, and somebody says we need a 75% marginal income tax rate on the wealthy, you know, you don't really care because you're not paying income taxes anymore. That's not what Warren Buffett pays. He doesn't pay income taxes like he does with long-term capital gains, right? Which is a much, much lower tax rate. It says, in that regard, steep wealth taxes shield incumbent firms from competition, which stymies the dynamic aspect of the market economy. In this sense, progressive taxation checks economic progress and makes for rigidity. Mises concluded, while under unhampered capitalism, the ownership of capital is a liability forcing the owner to serve the consumers. Modern methods of taxation perform it and transform it into a privilege to own capital, to own the means of production, right? Now we're getting into Marxism here. If owning means of production is only a privilege for the very few, which is what this becomes, right? That is actually Marxism, right? That is what Marxism ends up with, right? A very oligarch heavy, the top firms are the dominant firms, and they bitch and bitch about monopolies, right, guys? They bitch about monopolies, but they'll create them like crazy with these types of policies. It says, the desire by some to impose confiscatory taxes on the wealthy is driven largely by an envy that blinds them to the fact that such taxes would end up hurting the common man much more than the billionaires. Moreover, the taxes could serve to protect the already wealthy from the competition and hamper economic progress. Not just economic progress, but technological advancement and progress is, in my opinion. It may be emotionally satisfying for many to favor sticking it to billionaires, but reason informs us that in doing so, it is the poor who would end up paying the steepest price. And regardless of that, you know, there's a reason why our lives are so much unbelievably better now than they were in the past, right? There's a reason why. And it's not the government policy. You couldn't legislate our technological revolutions that we've seen, right? If you go back 500 years... I mean, they didn't have anything that we have today. 500 years ago, that wasn't legislated into being. You couldn't, as a king, say, you know, thou will shit in toilets and thou will have airplanes and cars, right? That was an innovator who did that kind of stuff. So it is important to completely encourage this innovation. And despite the levels of taxation that we have that, you know, I believe are confiscatory already, we have still been able to transcend that because of the power of technology and growth and the economy and the means of exchange between people, of free people. So despite all the odds against us, despite the chains that we already have on progress in the economy, we've still done pretty well. But can you imagine what it would have been like differently if those chains had not been there in the first place, or they had been very light, or things would have been very, very voluntary in this world? The differences that could have been made, right? We don't need government at this level, guys. We don't need government at this level at all. A government that sucks up more than half of the GDP, that's a bit ridiculous. Do we need government services for half of everything we put into this world? Half of everything we put into this world, do we need government for that? Well, guess what? Government is more than half, right? Government now takes half of their money from us, which is about a 50% total tax burden at the end of the day. We're not talking about income taxes. We're talking about every tax you ever pay added up. And they're also supplementing that income with printing money. So they're robbing us of buying power at the same time, folks. Does government need to be that big? No. No, it does not need to be that big. That is my argument for the day. I hope you enjoyed the Mises article. You guys should check out this Mises Institute. They really do publish some fantastic stuff. And it's thoughtful and it's simple. It's simple. So it's fun to go through. It's fun to share with others. And, you know, maybe I'm just weird if I, you know, like to share this type of stuff with others, but here I am broadcasting it to all of you guys. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. That'll do it for the day. This is Kyle Keegan signing off. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Twitter. Give us your 5-star reviews and also tell your friends. Send your voicemail questions in to be featured on the show. Check out killbigger.com where you can find a podcasting app. If you don't have a favorite yet, find books we have mentioned on this show and stay informed with our mailing list and Kill Bigger blog. Thank you for supporting the show and being part of this movement up the charts. Join the discussion at thefastlaneforum.com. God bless you guys. People like you are the future. Have a fantastic rest of your day and we will be back with you tomorrow. Until next time, everybody keep killing bigger.